It's primary night in New Jersey, and the polls have just closed. Good evening, everyone. I'm Brian Lehrer, and this hour, it's a New Jersey primary night call-in. No matter what state you live in, there are lessons from today for voting in November, whether by mail or in person. There are some very interesting congressional primaries in both North and South Jersey, including the AOC wing versus two Democratic incumbents who have alienated progressives. Some of you may not even know as well that one New Jersey congressman changed parties during this term. He was such a pro-Trump Democrat, he switched sides. What's happening in his district is part of the story tonight, too. There's a Kennedy in the mix. There's all of how COVID-19 and the racial justice movement may have shown up at the polls. And it was Bernie versus Biden, mano a mano in the presidential primary in New Jersey. So there's plenty to talk about. We'll open the phones in a minute with our first caller question. Joe Hernandez from WHYY Philadelphia will join us later on. I think he's going to say the bigger news today, based on the long lines he saw, was that the Motor Vehicles Agency offices reopened today. And with me now is New Jersey Public Radio's managing editor, our own Nancy Solomon. Hi, Nancy. Happy primary night.
Thank you. Hi, Brian.
Do you think that was true in North Jersey, too, about motor vehicles?
Oh, absolutely. WNYC's Karen Yee was out hitting a few spots. I think she spent a lot of time in Wayne, where there's a big DMV there, and people had been waiting for 8 hours, and a lot of them never got into the building. So a lot of upset over trying to get a driver's license rather than trying to vote.
So not everything in New Jersey has changed in 2020. It's still so much about the cars. Let's make our first call in about how either of the two world-changing events of this year have affected your vote. So listeners, how did COVID-19 affect your vote? And or how did the racial justice movement affect your vote? 646-435-7280 is our call-in number tonight. 646-435-7280, New Jersey. Did COVID change how you voted, by mail or in person? Did it change if you voted, scared you away, or motivated you more? How was your voting experience? Whether you mailed in a ballot or voted in person, how was that for you? And how's Governor Murphy doing, in your opinion, in handling safety and the economy? 646-435-7280. And about the anti-racism movement, these are Democratic primaries. So did the rising movement change what kind of Democrat you voted for, or how compelled you felt to vote in this election, or how you see your place in our democracy, or whatever else you want to say? 646-435-7280, 646-435-7280. Again, either of those things, did COVID and or the rising racial justice movement affect anything about your New Jersey primary vote or voting experience or feeling about your vote? 646-435-7280, 646-435-7280. And we'll throw in that one more for good measure. How's Governor Murphy doing, in your opinion, in handling these changing times? And you know what? There was Governor Murphy on Meet the Press on Sunday morning.
We're starting to see a small spikes in reinfection from folks coming back from places like Myrtle Beach and as well as in Florida, other hot spots. To me, it says we need a national strategy. We're only as strong as our weakest link right now. As you mentioned in the outset of the program, I said we went through hell. We cannot afford to go through hell again. We need a national strategy, I think, right now, and masking has got to be at the core of that.
So, Nancy Solomon, do you have any way to tell whether the pandemic could affect any of the outcomes today?
Oh, absolutely it could affect it, because what you have is the first ever, you know, almost total vote by mail. I mean, there were polling stations open in every town, one per town, and then, excuse me, more in some of the cities. But those are provisional ballot situations. You go because you're having trouble with your mail-in ballot, or for some folks who are disabled and needed to go. But it's a paper ballot still. But what this really is I think what we're going to see is a huge amount of turnout for a primary, which, you know, these are not the highest turnout elections, and usually candidates run to the base in these elections. Mm-hmm. So Democrats running more to the left and Republicans running more to the right, and then they try to swing back for the general to capture the independent voters in the general. And I think what you're, it was, now there were problems, and I'm sure we'll talk about them tonight, but it was so easy for your ballot to just arrive at your doorstep, fill it out, and stick it in the mail with, you didn't even need a stamp or an envelope for that matter. So I think what we're going to see is a lot more people probably voted, and so you're not going to get the kind of results that you would see in a normal primary.
Really interesting. About that Murphy clip, pleading for a nationwide mask policy on Meet the Press, if Washington or many states won't even do that, I'm starting to think a radical thought. Maybe New York and New Jersey should consider going further and closing off these two states, and maybe Connecticut too, to travelers from the sort of willfully infected states, like we closed down the country to travel from China, and like Europe now has shut down travel from here. All we have is these voluntary, unenforceable, two-week quarantines. I just don't know how effective they can be. My question is anybody in government that you know of talking about sealing ourselves off for a while after having done this right when other states have refused?
Well, I think the two-week quarantine, of course, is hard to enforce, but I think you see that this is Murphy and his people really grappling with the problem. I mean, you know, I got a feel for them, I feel for me. It's super frustrating after everything we've been through to have stayed home and to be religiously wearing a mask on any ventures outside the home, and then to have the infection rate spike up. I wouldn't call it a spike quite yet, but it has, they had it down to like just somewhere, I believe, about 0.65 to 0.70 infection rate. So that means for every person infected, less than another person was getting infected from, from them. So that's how you curtail the spread.
Right. People weren't spreading.
And now we're up over one. During the peak, it was up over five. And, you know, we don't want to go back to that. I think we can all agree on that. So I have not heard from Governor Murphy what kind of drastic measures he would consider taking. But I think, you know, we do have the New Jersey Turnpike. I mean, if people want to come through, I mean, there, you know, that was something Rhode Island was suggesting. I think I even heard you talking about this recently on a show.
Yeah, right. And we talked about it when it was almost going to happen. The governor of Rhode Island, Raimondo, was thinking of closing off the border to cars with New York license plates when New York was the surge state. And New Yorkers, you know, really objected to that. Didn't object to the two-week quarantine, but objected to any idea about closing the border, and she backed off, the governor, and so, but you know, here we are.
Yeah, I can see the meme or the bumper sticker is, you know, time for traffic problems on the Delaware Memorial Bridge.
Good one, really good one. All right.
You know, I don't know. I think it's very, very frustrating that, and I think, you know, you used the word willful, and I think it's just very frustrating that we haven't had the leadership in Washington to really set the tone of what we need as a country. And so, you know, I think the whole Northeast is, you know, people are very upset and concerned about, now do we have to go through a second wave because of this?
Let's take a phone call. Colleen in Lawrence, you're on WNYC. Thank you so much for calling in. Happy primary night. Do we have Colleen? Am I saying that right? We're going to try this another way. Sorry, just a little technical issue here, I think. I think 3, 2, 1, before I go to another caller, I think the problem is on our end, and we're going to fix it. Oh, hi, now we've got you, Colleen. Hi there. Sorry, that technical problem was us. Hi.
That's okay.
So did COVID-19 or did the racial justice movement affect anything about your vote today?
Both of the above made me much more highly motivated to make sure I got myself to where whatever I needed to do to vote in this primary. I applied for my mailing ballot. I did not receive it, but I went home, checked my mail one more time again, and it wasn't there. After work, I went right to my polling place, determined I was going to vote. It's so important. It's just it put to the forefront how important this is to vote. I'm going to start the process tomorrow to apply to be a poll worker in the November election. And I always have voter registration forms with me at work. I have registered coworkers at work, some of which are new citizens, some of whom are new citizens to the United States. And it's just so important. And another thing, I wish I could have been voting in the district to for the Jeff Van Drew's district down there. I wish I could be a stand-in citizen down there. I went to Rider University two years ago, to hear Jeff Van Drew, and he talked such a good line about how he's going to work with all coalitions and be a coalition builder and be a voice of brotherhood and sisterhood and work for justice. And
then he changed parties and became a Trumpist.
Yeah, I mean, I was livid. He was a turncoat. I went and heard him that evening, and he was a turncoat. He's a traitor in our book.
All right, Colleen, I'm going to move on and get some other callers in, but I want to tell you we're going to be talking about the primary later in the hour that you're referring to. That's the Democrats who want to run against Jeff Van Drew, who changed parties this term. And obviously, well, you don't live in that district, so you won't get your say on that in November. But I hear how strongly you feel, and we're going to dive into that as the hour goes on. So thank you very much for starting us off. We're going to go to line one next, Judy in Long Branch. Judy, you're on WNYC. Hi there.
Hi there. How are you, Brian?
Good. So how did COVID or the racial justice movement affect your vote or your voting experience?
Well, everything affected my vote. I haven't been working since, of course, the pandemic started, and I'm not eligible for unemployment. But I was surprised that we had all gotten, in my area of Long Branch, I guess the entire city, we all got mail-in ballots. I guess all of us who are registered, I'm a registered Democrat, and whoever was registered, whatever. Never have I voted mail-in before, but I was bound and determined to do this the right way. I must have read that thing over about five times. A little bit confused about why Bernie Sanders was on the ticket. Didn't want to. I love Bernie Sanders, but I didn't want to vote for him because I didn't want to take away the votes from Biden, and I didn't want the person that's in the White House to win this time. So I figured, let me just vote my party, and I did that. And I was just I went to the post office. I talked to the voting district. I spoke to them, and they asked where we could, because a couple of my friends and I were kind of hoping that our ballots were safe. We've never done this before. So the woman told me if I go to the post office and have them hand stamp it for me, I know that at least it's postmarked in the right day. So I went to the post office, and the woman was a little bit put off. I said, please hand stamp it. She says, you could put it in the box. I said, no, I want to make sure you stamp it so I know it's going to be at least postmarked for the right time. Mm-hmm. Now, if they got it, I don't know because I didn't follow it. But I am. It was very strange for me to have to do this. I've never, like I said, never done this before.
Judy, thanks for telling us that story. I appreciate it. I appreciate your call and that detail. And Nancy Solomon, I think that detail is kind of a window into a larger question of what's your sense of how well the mail-in system and the drop-off ballot system have actually worked?
Yeah, I talked to a few county clerks today about it, and several of them mentioned how important it is for people to ask for their postmark to the hand stamp because they were concerned for folks who were mailing in today that the post office might send along the ballot without the stamp. So you know, I don't know to what extent that may or may not happen, but obviously your envelope needs to have the postmark on it. If it arrives starting tomorrow for the next week, it'll still be counted. You know, the clerks in the election departments were under a tremendous amount of stress for the last couple months, and certainly in the days now leading up to this. You know, they had to deal with sending out ballots to every single registered voter for every Republican and every Democrat. They had to send an application to every unaffiliated voter that gave them the opportunity to register with a party to be able to vote in the primary. And if when those came in, they had to process them and send ballots to those people. And the Ocean County clerk talked about how he had pallets of printed ballots and envelopes arriving, you know, at his building. He had workers working from home. He had workers in masks. He had social distancing to deal with. So they were pretty stressed out. And they also, several of the clerks told me that voters have been just super confused. I mean, I think some people are hailing, and there was a lot on Twitter. In fact, hashtag NJ primary was actually trending this evening on Twitter, and a lot of people talking about how they voted by mail, how easy it was. But then we've heard from a lot of people, and I heard this both from the clerks and from people that we've interviewed, that the ballot's confusing. And of course, we could talk about ballot design, and there's now a lawsuit against the ballot design in New Jersey, but the ballot's confusing. The whole process of sending in your ballot was confusing. Some people got their ballots back in the mail after they mailed them in. And I've got to the bottom of that one today as well when I talked to the clerks.
Why would somebody have been sent? I'll bite on that one. Yeah. Why would somebody have been sent their ballot back in the mail after they put it in a mailbox?
Because the envelope, so you fill out your ballot, you put it in an envelope that you sign and seal, and then that goes into the envelope that gets mailed. And the envelope that gets mailed, which is pre-printed and goes to your county election department and is has the postage on it, so it's free. On the back, it has a scan code, and the scan code is meant to be used by the election workers. When the envelope comes in, they scan it, and they start tracking that ballot. They now have a record that ballot has come in, and it's come in from a particular person at a particular address because of that scan code. Well, apparently, the U.S. Postal Service scan code system reads those codes as well. And so every once in a while, it would get read by a machine at the post office and just end up going back out and back home to the person. I talked to the county clerk in Hunterdon County, which is a rural county, and she did not have problems with this, but she has so many fewer voters than, say, Essex, Bergen, Morris. And apparently in more populous counties, just because of the number of ballots, this is what happened for, you know, a significant number of people.
Yeah. Well, let's take an Essex County voter next. Lewis in Newark. You're on WNYC. Hi, Lewis. Thank you for calling in.
Hello, my two favorite people covering this election in New Jersey.
Thank you.
Yes, there was a lot of problems with people getting ballots back. Went to a couple of places where they were doing provisional only. But I have a question. They were supposed to be doing all mail-in ballots, and then all of a sudden, maybe a month ago, it was decided that they were going to do in-person voting. And that, too, is very confusing to people. So the turnout was very low in Newark because you really didn't know there was a primary for a lot of these candidates.
Interesting. Yeah. Nancy, you know what? I'm going to bring on somebody who I think you have arranged to join us for a couple of minutes who might have a good answer to that for Lewis, at least in terms of how it worked out today. It's Hanel Patel, who is from the New Jersey Institute for Social Justice, and I think was a poll watcher today. Hanel, is that you? Do we have you?
Hi, this is Hanel Patel from the New Jersey Institute for Social Justice.
So thanks for joining us for a couple of minutes. Tell us about your poll watching experience, and to what Lewis in Newark was saying, well, where were you? And do you think turnout was really low because in-person voting was kind of thrown onto the fire at the last minute?
Yeah. So to clarify a couple of things, one, we were poll monitored, we were monitoring issues, but not poll watching as you traditionally do at a lot of locations. Some of that was for COVID related reasons, but we were monitoring issues statewide. For the question about the format of the election, yes, that is something that there has been a fair amount of voter confusion on, and it isn't so much that they changed that a decision was made or they changed their minds or anything like that. It was actually when the executive order, the governor signed the executive order for this specific primary and what it would look like. At that moment, it was going to expand and encourage vote by mail. That's why everyone was sent either a vote by mail ballot or an application, all registered voters. But alternatively, though, there was always going to be at least one polling place available per municipality and in each county, when possible, up to 50% of their polling places had to be open. This is something we, with our partners, advocated for. It was incredibly important that we had this option because we recognized that there would be groups who cannot or will not vote by mail. And this is also a lesson learned from the May election. And this is partly what has led to the confusion. So we had an election in May. I know both of you covered it too a bit. And especially in those towns, there were over 30 municipalities in the state of New Jersey that had a local election in May. That one was fully vote by mail. Mm-hmm. So if you have a municipality, a city like Newark that had an election just a couple of months ago that was vote by mail, and then this one, that type of change has led to more confusion, right? Mm-hmm. Because they're back-to-back elections and we did change the format. So especially in those cities and those places, we are seeing a little bit more, a lot of people don't necessarily know that there was going to be a polling place available. And then you also have the broader language. There has been just discussion. A lot of people have called it primarily vote by mail election, or we're doing a vote by mail election, and it means that if you're just learning about it, you might not recognize that there were in-person polling places available.
Really interesting. So do you think, briefly, that the problems that you just described and the uncertainties for voters out there that you just described might wind up affecting the outcome of any races?
That's a good question. I don't know. This is a type of election that's hard to predict because of the increase in vote by mail. We don't know the numbers yet completely. Obviously, they haven't released those, and there's still going to be any vote by mail ballot that is postmarked by today and received for until next Tuesday for 7 days will be counted. So we're still going to see a surge of vote by mail ballots coming in. But we've already seen a significant increase in those numbers over the last compared to the last few years. So it's hard to tell yet what the difference in voter turnout is going to be in any place, let alone collectively, mm-hmm. depending on what the race is. So it's a little hard to predict that. But we do know this much. All close races, no close races are probably going to be called tonight. They are not going to, they might not even be called tomorrow or a few days from now. But ballots are going to be, as long as they're received until next week, they will be counted. We have a signature, a ballot cure procedure now, notice and cure procedure for signature match issues due to litigation we are involved with. And that one allows people to, if there was an issue they recognize with your signature, either in your vote by mail ballot or your provisional ballot, the county is required to send you notice within 24 hours. And then that notice will be a cure form. You can declare that, yes, no, that's my ballot. Don't throw it away. And send it back in either in person, by mail, by email, by fax, by the July 23rd. So depending on how many of those go out, there might be some close races that we don't even know about until the 24th.
So
it's that much we do know that it's it's hard to predict what's going to happen. But for one thing, we should all be a little patient.
Yeah, patient and so interesting, and obviously with so many ramifications potentially for how things go in November, as this, it's a real election, but it's also a dress rehearsal for the big one. So Henel Patel from the New Jersey Institute for Social Justice, thanks for giving us a few minutes. We really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
And this is a New Jersey primary night call-in special on WNYC. I'm Brian Lehrer with Nancy Solomon. Joe Hernandez from WHYY will join us in a few minutes, too. Now, call-in number two. So, screeners, clear the board. We're going to put a new question out there. And for part two of the show, we're going to focus on one specific Democratic congressional primary. Then later we're going to have a third question later this hour as well. But for this question number two, incumbent Josh Gottheimer, who critics on the left call Trump's favorite Democrat, versus Arti Kribik, backed by the progressive wing, including AOC and others, in the sprawling 5th Congressional District in North Jersey, which used to be represented by Republican Scott Garrett. So how is the Democratic Party's internal ideological fight playing out, we wonder? And can a progressive win in that fairly conservative part of the state? You can start calling now if you voted in that race. And that's the question. If you voted in the Gottheimer versus Kribik race, who did you vote for and why? 646-435-7280, for people who voted for Gottheimer or Kribik in that election. Another one of these bellwether elections for where the Democratic Party is going nationally, not just in one congressional district in North Jersey. So Gottheimer voters, Kribik voters, if you're out there, 646-435-7280, and tell us how tough a decision this was for you. Maybe you like Josh Gottheimer, but you were torn, or however it went for you. 646-435-7280, as we continue in a minute. This is a New Jersey primary night call-in special on WNYC. I'm Brian Lehrer with New Jersey Public Radio managing editor Nancy Solomon. And we're now introducing call-in number two out of our three this hour, focusing on one specific Democratic congressional primary. As I said before the break, incumbent Josh Gottheimer, who critics on the left call Trump's favorite Democrat, versus Arti Kribik, backed by the progressive wing, including AOC, in the sprawling 5th Congressional District in North Jersey, which used to be represented by Republican Scott Garrett. Now, as your calls are coming in, we'll hear about the several most competitive races today. And Nancy, let's start with Gottheimer versus Kribik. For people not from there, I think of the 5th Congressional District like the corner piece of a jigsaw puzzle. You know, it basically runs along the whole north edge of the state line with New York, east to west, starting right across from Yonkers all the way out to Port Jervis, and then down along the Pennsylvania border around the Delaware Water Gap, a corner jigsaw puzzle piece covering parts of Bergen, Warren, Sussex, and Passaic County, 80% white, according to Ballotpedia. So, Nancy, districts in America that are 80% white elect Republicans generally, and the previous Congressman Scott Garrett was a very conservative one. He was a Tea Party Republican. So how did Josh Gottheimer get elected in 2016 in the first place at the same time as Donald Trump?
Oh, I'm going to have to wipe away the cobwebs in my brain. But I believe that, Garrett had faced some very strong Democratic challengers over a series of years. You know, every 2 years, House representatives are up for election. And so every year, the Democratic challenger over the space of about 10 years kept getting closer and closer. And then when Gottheimer came along, it was on the heels of Garrett. There was some controversy about gay rights, and maybe you remember, help me out here if you remember, but I believe he had refused to take money from a Republican gay organization. I think that's what it was. And it was right, you know, we all talk many times about how, you know, gay rights and acceptance of lesbian and gay people has changed so rapidly in this country. And it was right at that moment when attitudes were changing. And so Garrett got caught up in that. He lost the election. You know, and Ed Gottheimer, you know, I know that there are a lot of Democrats unhappy with him, but, you know, you gotta give the guy some credit. He's in a very, very mixed, very important district, very, you know, Bergen County, it sort of is the Ohio of New Jersey. Mm. And so he's in a very, very mixed district. And if he can survive a primary challenge, then he's a pretty good match for many of the voters in Bergen County. Now, people on the left are going to not like that I said that, but I think that is, you know, I think what we're seeing this year is there are three different challenges going on in these congressional races. There are 12 districts in New Jersey. And what we're seeing is a race like Gottheimer's where Democrats are frustrated with him that he is too middle of the road, that he works with Republicans, et cetera. And then there's the kind of challenge that Hector Oseguera in District 8 is waging against Albie Osiris.
That's Hudson County, Jersey City, Hoboken, Elizabeth, around there.
Exactly. And it's the only majority Latinx voting congressional district in New Jersey. And Albie Osiris is a Cuban American, comes out of the Democratic machine. But, you know, he's kind of one of these guys who hasn't got much of a profile. And people are, you know, some people are frustrated that he just sort of glides to victory without any kind of challenge. There's no, you know, people feel that there's no accountability. There's obviously, you know, there's always been a lot of frustration with the Hudson County machine. So there's that going on, too. And along comes Hector Oseguera, who's, you know, worked on the AOC campaign in Queens to upset the machine there. He's, you know, young and dynamic. He's Dominican, which, you know, there's been sort of generational change in terms of the immigrant community in this district and where people come from. And now it's more Central American and Dominican rather than Cuban. Mm-hmm. So, you know, so but he's challenging kind of the, you know, that here Osiris doesn't deserve people's vote. He hasn't done enough in Congress. So there's that. And then, you know, there's the fight going on in the second congressional district.
Now,
which
hang on,
we'll
hold that. Right. That's the fascinating South Jersey district that the caller referred to before, where the incumbent Jeff Andrew switched parties from Democrat to Republican in the middle of this term. But we have a Gottheimer caller standing by, and we have a Krybek caller standing by. Let's hear from each of them. Karen in Bergen County, you're on WNYC. Karen, thanks so much for calling in.
Oh, thank you, Brian, for taking the call. I've been speaking with you before. I moved here to Bergen County a little over a year ago from South Florida, from Miami-Dade County. I've known Josh, not personally, but I've known him from work that I've done on behalf of Israel in Washington, D.C. for many, many years. Even when I was a Florida resident, I've always respected him. I've respected his support for Israel, but I've also respected that he's a sharp, bright, well-educated young man, and he is middle of the road on a lot of issues, as I am. I think I'm a staunch Democrat, and he is a staunch Democrat, but he is not on the edge. He's right down the middle, mm-hmm. which is exactly where I am. So I have quite a few reasons to support him in this election, and I voted for him by absentee ballot.
Karen, thank you so much. And by contrast, I think we're going to go to Tina in Wyckoff. Tina, you're on WNYC. Thank you for calling in.
Hello. I voted for Dr. Artie because even though the first two times in 2016 and 2018, I voted for Josh. But then he got involved with the problem solvers, and if you read what they're about, they won't even tell you what their goals are, what their mission statement is.
It's like this. It's a bipartisan, part bipartisan group in Congress of sort of centrists, right?
Well, that's what they say, but they make a commitment. There's a majority of Republicans in the group,
and they make a commitment that whatever the majority decides, if you're a Democrat, you have to go with the majority. And he has voted with Trump more than I believe any other Democrat. And he's against net neutrality. He's putting certain revisions in, even for the immigration bill. And we all worked so hard for him to get the vote out for him. And now he's referring to the activists in Bergen County as radicals. And he won't meet with us. He won't have with us. So I had to go with someone that is willing to talk to me.
And Tina, I'm going to...
goals are.
Thank you so much. And Nancy, briefly, before we move on and bring in Joe Hernandez and switch to the fascinating race in the 2nd District, we heard it in a nutshell from those two callers, I think, the heart of Gottheimer support and the heart of Kreibich support. And the Kreibich voter there referenced immigration, and I think that's how Gottheimer got the derisive nickname in some quarters, Trump's favorite Democrat, because of his votes on some of the border security stuff, right?
Yes, I think that is correct. And, you know, it's going to be very interesting. I was talking with one of the progressive activists in New Jersey who's involved statewide coordinating some of these efforts, you know, and she was saying that it'll be really interesting, even if R.T. Kreibich isn't able to beat Gottheimer, it'll be a very, very telling just what percentage of the vote that she's able to get, because, you know, the progressive wing is sort of the ceiling has been about 33%, and they want to push that, and they want to, you know, they would consider it a victory if she were to pull 40% of the votes in this race.
Yeah, and according to 538, my producer was telling me Gottheimer votes with Trump 33% of the time. So that means two-thirds of the time he doesn't, but 33% is high for a Democrat. All right. Also joining us now and bringing up our south flank, public radio reporter Joe Hernandez. Usually on this station when we say from WHYY in Philadelphia, the next words are, this is fresh air. But tonight from WHYY in Philadelphia, this is Joe Hernandez. He also covers state government for WBGO in Newark. Hi, Joe. Thanks for giving your WNYC pal some time tonight. Happy primary night.
Hey, Brian. Happy primary. Sorry to disappoint that I'm not fresh air.
No disappointment. Not in this context. I see your top tweet today was about the long lines on this special day. Not at the polls, but for day one of the motor vehicles office reopening. Want to talk about that for a sec?
Sure. It was like up is down and down was up today. I mean, I was out at some of the polling places in New Jersey and I didn't see any lines and haven't heard reports of any major lines at polling places. But the, as you say, the Motor Vehicle Commission offices were opening for the first day of in-person transactions in maybe more than three months. And there were enormous long lines reported there. So I think we'll be hearing from the governor about that tomorrow.
All right. Both of you are following this interesting primary in South Jersey to run against Congressman Jeff Van Drew, who switched parties during this term from Democrat to Republican. Joe, can you give us a little background on why that happened? Who goes from Democrat to pro-Trump in New Jersey after the Democrats did so well in the 2018 midterms?
Yeah, and that's when Van Drew was elected to his seat. But the district that he was elected to is not a traditionally Democratic district. It's very purple, and it had had Frank Lobiondo, a Republican, as its congressman for more than two decades before then. And this is the most southern part of New Jersey. It's very rural. A lot of places are Republican, and even a lot of the Democratic, you know, parts of that district lean conservative. And Jeff Van Drew had always been a conservative Democrat, as many South Jersey Democrats are. And the party switch came right around the impeachment vote, which seems like many lifetimes ago. But Van Drew was one of two Democrats to vote against impeaching President Trump. I think maybe thought he saw the way the wind was blowing and decided to switch parties in a kind of very highly publicized event in the Oval Office. And he got a lot of praise and a lot of flack for that.
And this is the second congressional district on the very south tip of the state. So Atlantic City is in the northeast part of this district, down to Cape May along the ocean, and then back up to the west along the Delaware Bay and along the border with Delaware, that far south. So to run against Van Drew, Joe, would it be fair to say we have the Governor Murphy faction against the South Jersey Democratic machine boss George Norcross faction?
Yes, I think that would be fair to say. Amy Kennedy got the endorsement from Governor Phil Murphy. She's the wife of former Congressman Patrick Kennedy, who is the son of Ted Kennedy. Bridget Harrison, former political science professor, who was often quoted speaking on New Jersey politics, got the backing of South Jersey power broker George Norcross and State Senate President Steve Sweeney, who make up kind of the leadership of that faction. And there were a couple other candidates in that race, including Will Cunningham, a former congressional staffer who worked for Senator Cory Booker, who also made a showing. And I'm not sure, I guess I may be making news with this, but George Norcross put out a statement just a couple minutes ago congratulating Amy Kennedy on her victory. There was some chatter on Twitter that Kennedy was in the lead, and it looks like Norcross has conceded that. So I'm not sure we got an official word on that. The New Jersey Globe had also been predicting that, but that came in from George Norcross about 10 minutes ago.
So that would mean the Murphy faction won. So you've covered the Norcross machine, Nancy, quite a bit. It's going to be Amy Kennedy. It's going to be an actual Kennedy, I mean, by marriage, to the son of Edward Kennedy, running against Jeff Van Drew, who changed from Democrat to Republican. So that's going to be a national media race, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it's going to get a lot of attention. I mean, you know, you've got the Kennedy name. There's a lot of interest in Van Drew because of his defection from the party. And the primary was interesting because of the battle over the influence of the machine, but George Norcross has pledged that he would support whatever Democrat won the primary. So now you're going to have either machine support, which is very important, and powerful, or at least the machine is going to look not get in the way. So it's going to be interesting. And you know, this is a district, as Joe was saying, it's very purple. It voted for Trump, but in 2008 and 2012, it voted for Obama. And before that, it voted for George W. Bush. Huh. And before that, it voted for Gore, I think. I'm forgetting exactly who came before Bush. Maybe it was Clinton. It voted for Bill Clinton. So this is truly a swing district. It has about even number of registered Republicans and Democrats, but that, of course, doesn't account for the independents in a general election. A lot has been made of Jeff Van Drew being a conservative Democrat and that's what it takes to win in this particular district. But I'm of a different opinion. I believe that the George Norcross machine is much more powerful than your average person understands, and that, you know, he anointed Jeff Van Drew, and Jeff Van Drew's career was basically bolstered for many years in the state Senate by the Norcross machine. So Van Drew could face trouble now that he doesn't have King George behind him.
Really, really interesting. All right, this is a New Jersey primary night call-in special on WNYC. I'm Brian Lehrer with Nancy Solomon and Joe Hernandez. And now call-in number 3. Listeners, did you vote in the Democratic presidential primary in New Jersey today? Now, unlike in New York last month, which we covered here on primary night there, there were just two candidates on the ballot today, Joe Biden and Bernie Sanders. There were all those other ones, like maybe not all 23, but a lot of them still on the ballot in New York. So listeners, did you vote in the presidential primary in New Jersey? Why did you feel strongly enough to vote at this point when Biden has already clinched the nomination with enough delegates from previous states? If you voted in the New Jersey presidential primary for Sanders or Biden, 646-435-7280, 646-435-7280. Call in and we'll put you on right after this. This is a New Jersey primary call-in special on WNYC. I'm Brian Lehrer with New Jersey Public Radio Managing Editor Nancy Solomon and Joe Hernandez, state government reporter for WHYY in Philadelphia and WBGO in Newark. And our third and final call-in this hour is, did you vote in the presidential primary in New Jersey? Call in and tell us why you bothered, what statement you were trying to make, despite the fact that Biden's already clinched. 646-435-7280, 646-435-7280. And Nikki in Lyndhurst, you're on WNYC. Hi, Nikki.
Hi, how are you?
Good. You voted?
Yes, I did.
Four.
I voted for Bernie Sanders.
And why does it matter to you to do that after Biden clinched the nomination?
Well, Bernie did not drop out. He just suspended his campaign, and they're allowing him to amass as many delegates as possible. A vote for Bernie in the primary does not affect Joe Biden in the general election, which most people have forgotten. I'm a Bernie delegate. So when you vote for Bernie, you're voting for people like me who are not party elitists to go to the DNC and help push the Democratic platform more left.
And so by having more delegates, you're going to presumably have more sway on the platform committee and things like that. What would your number one and two issues be in that respect, since you're going to get to participate in this process in some way, it sounds like?
So not only am I a Bernie delegate, I'm also Lawrence Ham's communications director. So I stand for all the major platforms that Bernie Sanders agrees with. But my number one issue is going to be the Medicare for all. And my number two issue, that it's not 100% Bernie, but it is all the New Jersey candidates who did run under Bernie, is that we want drastic criminal, economic, and social justice reform.
Nikki, thank you so much for weighing in. Good luck at the convention. Check in with us during that. And Atoji in North Brunswick, you're on WNYC. Hello, Atoji.
Hi, Brian. Good evening. Like I told you, Screener, I did vote for Biden today, even though I felt like he already, clinched the nomination. I just wanted to exercise my right to vote and also encourage, my friends and others to also do the same, so Biden can know that he has a strong support going into November. And just one point I just wanted to make, if I may add to what I just heard from the previous caller.
Please.
I think at this point, the Democrats need to understand that we need to survive before we can thrive. The whole point is to get Donald Trump out of the White House. Pushing Biden to the far left might trigger some kind of reactions that we may not want in November. I just want to put that out there. Thank you.
Thank you very much. So there we heard from a Bernie supporter and a Biden supporter with the various arguments on each side, and as you can hear, people still care despite the clinching of the nomination. We can call it clinching because there are enough delegates pledged to Biden that he will win on the first ballot at the primary, at the convention. And so unless something happens and he drops out for some other reason, he's going to get nominated. So Joe Hernandez from WHYY and WBGO, we've been doing a lot on the station about the New York City police funding and police reform debates. And both the callers mentioned social justice, racial justice. I see you did a police reform story the other day about body cameras becoming universal in New Jersey. How active is the defund or reform movement at the state level, including, you know, for the new budget year? A lot of our listeners in New York know the convulsions in New York City around this. What's going on in New Jersey?
Yeah, I would say it's probably not as loud as it is in New York or some other places. You know, the protests certainly were happening all across the state, including calls to defund the police. And the governor has been asked about this and kind of deferred. I mean, he said, you know, he supports more community resources, but he thinks that a budget is more about your priorities, and he would be a little bit, it sounds like, leery of embracing the defund the police slogan. The other side of this is that they're kind of they're defunding a lot of things right now out of necessity, because of just the projected shortfalls and the lack of tax revenues that they're seeing because of coronavirus. I mean, he just signed a 3-month budget about a week ago that cuts over $1 billion in spending and defers a pension payment and all sorts of other things. So the state is going to have to think about, you know, cuts it's going to have to make across the board as far as public spending goes.
Charlie in South Orange, you're on WNYC. Hi, Charlie.
Hi, Brian. So my wife and I split our ticket, sort of. I voted for Biden.
Trouble in paradise.
No, but I think in a very good way. I'll put her on in a second. She voted for Bernie. So I think I'm a fairly typical Democratic Biden supporter in that I was extremely unenthusiastic about Joe Biden in the early stages of the primary when it seemed to be up for grabs. I like Warren, I like Pete, and you know, was not crazy about Biden, but I thought it was important for him to beat Bernie in the end because I thought he could win and Bernie couldn't. And the reason I voted for Biden in the New Jersey primary is now that it's a fait accompli, just to show support. But my wife had a different reason for supporting Bernie. This is Bernice.
Hey, Brian.
We get a twofer here. This doesn't happen very much. Go ahead. I'm excited. Go ahead.
My reason for supporting Bernie is to have him to have as many delegates as possible, you know, to increase his influence in the whatever it is going to be for the, you know, for the convention. You know, his emphasis on health care, on a living wage, on reducing the wealth gap. And in light, and I don't know how many delegates he'll get, if any, from New Jersey, but in light of the recent Supreme Court ruling, which says, you know, that states, I don't know what New Jersey will do, can enact rules where delegates cannot vote their conscience and change their vote, it might make even more sense.
The electors in the Electoral College, yes, and you two can—you two can have dinner without sneering at each other, right?
Oh yeah, no, we're on the same wavelength. But that's not an issue. And
thanks to both of you for calling in. Thank you very much. I really appreciate it. I want to give a minute here to Sue Altman, Executive Director of New Jersey's Working Families Party, who has called in. Sue, we don't have much time left in the show, but we appreciate you chiming in a little bit. What do you want to say
Thanks.
About this primary day?
Well, yeah, it's been an exciting day for New Jersey progressives so far, especially down in South Jersey. Amy Kennedy has won a decisive victory over the machine handpicked candidate, the George Norcross machine handpicked candidate of Bridget Callahan Harrison, which for progressives like New Jersey Working Families and South Jersey Progressive Democrats, it shows an extraordinary statement that voters are sick and tired of New Jersey's political machines. We're sick and tired of corruption and business as usual. And I think it's going to be a new day in South Jersey from here on out.
How do we even know? I mean, I didn't expect any results tonight because such a large percentage of the vote was mail-in ballots, which presumably they haven't counted yet. So was her in-person voting total just so overwhelmingly large that the absentees can't make up for it? Or how do we even know this?
So it's a really good question. I'm not entirely sure. I do know that vote by mail, I believe it can be started. You can start counting in the morning. And so if the totals that have been announced are, you know, show such a strong lead after the votes that they've already counted, I think they can make the assumption. Plus, the Bridget Harrison campaign conceded. So obviously it's out there and Amy Kennedy is declared the winner.
I guess so. All right. So Altman, Executive Director of New Jersey's Working Families Party, thank you very much. Joe Hernandez from WHYY, 30 seconds. And Nancy, you'll get 30 seconds. Joe, how does everything that happened today set New Jersey up for November?
I think as far as vote by mail goes, it was a dry run, and the clerks will now have more time to prepare and think about it. But we haven't heard of any major issues. And as far as politics goes, the Amy Kennedy victory is a sign, take it however you will, about the Democratic machine in South Jersey, and it's going to set up a really fascinating race with Jeff Van Drew in the fall.
Nancy Solomon, same question.
Yeah, I concur. I mean, I think you can't really overestimate the power of this victory for Amy Kennedy in terms of what the activists there have been trying to do. You know, Jeff Van Drew won 55% of the vote against a very good African-American progressive candidate, Tansy Youngblood, in 2018, who only got 19% of the vote. And that was, it was a real raw power of the machine victory. And so you can see where 2 years of solid fighting against the machine in South Jersey is starting to pay off for the activists there. And then so, I also agree with Joe. You know, I think what would be great is if we could go to people voting at polling stations and vote by mail for November.
And that, ladies and gentlemen, is our New Jersey primary night special. Nancy Solomon is managing editor of New Jersey Public Radio. Joe Hernandez reports on state government for WHYY and WBGO. Nancy and Joe, great job. Thanks for working late for this.
Thank you.
Thanks, Brian.
This special was produced by Megan Ryan, Lisa Allison, and Zach Goddard-Cohen. That's Matt Morondo at the audio controls. I'm Brian Lehrer, and I invite you to listen to my daily morning call-in show, The Brian Lehrer Show, 10 a.m. to noon weekdays here on New York and New Jersey Public Radio. Tomorrow, our guests will include New York Senator Kirsten Gillibrand, who will take your calls. Until then, thanks for listening, and have a great night.